Today on the 21st Show, there have been countless books and documentaries made about Abraham Lincoln, but relatively few of those explore a particular aspect of his private life, his relationships with other men. We're revisiting a conversation from back in October about a documentary called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. The film makes the case that Lincoln's life and relationships have been put in the closet, so to speak, by straight historians.
It's the subtext of a lot of this material that is being reinterpreted because it was for so long gatekept by Lincoln scholars who looked at things from their own perspective, which is heteronormativity and straight ideology.
We'll talk with the director of the film, a scholar who was quoted in it, and another scholar who takes a different view. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If I asked you who the greatest American president was, who would you say? Being from Illinois, there's really but one answer: Abraham Lincoln. He did see the country through the Civil War, helped end slavery, and laid the groundwork for the Civil Rights Movement. But there's another aspect of Lincoln history that, until recent decades, had been much less discussed: his intimate life. 20 years ago, this conversation was thrust into the mainstream with the publication of The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln, written by C.A. Trupp, who had been a researcher for Alfred Kinsey. And now there's a documentary film exploring Lincoln's relationships with four men at different times in his life, building a case that Lincoln was, as the title of the film suggests, a lover of men. Here's a clip.
Every culture and society that's advanced far enough along in time and place raises up some people to worship. And we worship at the altar of Abraham Lincoln. We build monuments to his fame. He's on our currency, and he is everywhere you look. Abraham Lincoln is our God.
He's a private guy. He never talks about these intimate things that others might share. And that is what has led us to this great interest in him. Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
We can all agree that Abraham Lincoln is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, president in American history. But what if I told you that Abraham Lincoln is what we would today call queer? Would he still hold a place in your heart?
Back in October, we were joined by Sean Peterson, the director of Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. Also with us was Thomas Belchursky, a professor of history at Eastern Connecticut State University, who's featured in the documentary. And later in the program, we brought in another voice from a well-known Lincoln historian who takes a more skeptical view of some of the film's interpretations. Because our program's on tape today, we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, I began by asking Sean Peterson his goal in making the film.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned that you have a esteemed scholar coming on later, Michael Burlingame, who is, you know, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, and his work, you know, was instrumental in this film and in Lincolnography overall. In fact, where I found out mainly about this was a book by C.A. Tripp, Clarence Tripp, who was a sex researcher with Alfred Kinsey, and actually Professor Burlingame wrote a dissenting view of the book in the paperback version. So I know that Dr. Burlingame has, you know, for a long time kind of countered this idea, but I think Tripp did a tremendous job in this book, The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln, kind of going through the evidence. And the idea here is kind of what we get into in the film. The idea of the film isn't that Lincoln was gay. The idea of the film is talking about 19th century sexuality overall. And that's why we brought in a tremendous amount of experts who focus their work on 19th century sexuality. You know, we have people from Harvard and Columbia and Brown. We have the grandfather of queer history studies, Jonathan Ned Katz, who all talk about the fluidity of sexuality before the word gay was invented. So this idea that Lincoln was gay is not true, because there was no such thing as gay back then. There was no binary, there was no sexual identity, but there were behaviors. There were certainly people acting on their impulses at the time. And that was very common. And people like Jonathan Ned Katz, who's written entire books on men who sleep in beds, and the standard kind of conservative viewpoint on men shared beds was always for financial reasons. And Lincoln shared beds with lots of men for financial reasons. But Katz finds tons of evidence of where men shared beds and it became intimate. And there wasn't a lot of shame around it at the time. It was very common. So that's where I kind of got really interested in this topic, not just about Lincoln himself and the men that he was intimate with, but also the context and the larger picture of the time. That Lincoln wasn't an outlier. He was participating in these behaviors that were extraordinarily common at the time.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of interesting ideas in there, and that I want to get to, and maybe we can put a pin in some of those, like the idea of whether we can even apply modern concepts such as homosexuality, which I gather was a phrase that was even invented after Lincoln's lifetime. It wasn't even a concept that people really had at the time, in the way we think of it now, at least. We can come back to that a little later, but let's then get into some of the let's stick with the idea of how historians have traditionally talked about Lincoln's intimate life. And Thomas Belcherski, I'll put that question to you. How have historians thought about Lincoln's private life?
Well, it's also a really good question, and it is a rather rich, developed, impressive, and to my mind, fascinating historiography, the study of a topic. And again, to kind of echo my respect for Professor Burlingame, his book in 1994, The Inner World of Abraham Lincoln, really was the reopening of a study into Lincoln's private world, his marriage, his relationship to his family, and his closest friends. Since then, since the 1990s, yes, Clarence Tripp's book took a totally different interpretation. Jonathan Ned Katz's book did as well. And other scholars who I respect and have read continue to play with this idea of Lincoln's friendships and his marriage. It's an ongoing, I think, field, and I hope to contribute to myself. So really, to say that recently there's been a renaissance in Lincoln's intimate life and his world, and that's been to the benefit of my research in this film. What I think the film also shows, and what I would like to suggest, is before this period, there was a relative nadir in the understanding of Lincoln's inner life, and particularly there was this trope almost of him being happily married, and I think a corollary to that is robustly heterosexual. And I think, again, that can map onto the history of the 20th century, onto the repression of queer people more generally, and how historians reflect their times. What's interesting, though, is both the original historian and biographer of Abraham Lincoln's life, William Herndon, and subsequent biographers in the early period, including Carl Sandburg, give us a different view if those sources can be read differently. Sandburg, who's highlighted in the film, another famous Illinoisan who wrote so beautifully about Lincoln, was also one who hints at aspects of Lincoln's inner world that for almost 75 years went unnoticed. He talks about streaks of lavender within both Abraham Lincoln and Joshua Speed. What's surprising, perhaps, to us today is that those passages were later deleted from Sandburg's biography of Lincoln, leaving us a much less rich and or less vivid description of these two men. But again, I mentioned William Herndon. We all rely on this man. He is this obsessive biographer and former law partner, and as it turns out, another one of these close, intimate friends who actually spent time in the same room above Joshua Speed's store that he kept, and was actually literally in the room with these two. He had reason, he had motive to try to find everything there was about Lincoln's private world. Some of his stories, and I'll call them that, seem substantial, seem justifiable, pass the test of more than one verifiable source. Others, not so much. But we all are wrestling with Herndon's his own research. Scholarship into Herndon, into his sources, has been illuminating. And so in a sense, what's been so interesting these last 40 years, 35 years, has been reinvestigating Herndon and these sources and redebating them.
I want to play another clip now from the documentary Lover of Men. It sets up the relationships between Lincoln and the other men that are explored in the film.
It's incontestable that he had these relationships with men.
When you put together all of the evidence of Lincoln sleeping with various guys in his career when he didn't have to, it's really startling.
These are four individuals that just fit perfectly to a sexual arc that shows Lincoln at different phases of the time, different comfort levels, different behavior. Billy Green, working in the general store, and he's going to be Lincoln's best friend in New Salem. Lincoln's first love. Elmer Ellsworth, the finest little man I ever knew. He was willing to risk his life for Abraham Lincoln, and he did. Lincoln's bodyguard, Captain David Derrickson. Derrickson not only come to become a friend of Lincoln, but he actually will sleep with Lincoln as well. And of course, Joshua Speed is the love of his life.
All right. So, Thomas, the film, as we said, it doesn't necessarily make the case that Lincoln was gay, but you do say that Lincoln was likely what today people would refer to as queer. Why do you think these relationships were sexual or romantic?
Well, it's always interesting to hear yourself play it back, so thanks for sharing those clips. It should be said, in the magic that is Hollywood, I probably spent 8 hours total interviewing for this film. So when I hear that phrase, I'm like, was that exactly what I said the last time and the one before? But I stand by it. It's I think it very fairly, takes my point of view and presents it to the world. Queer is a more encompassing way to speak of sexuality and non-normative sexuality. It gets a little bit jargony when you say things like same-sex attraction and identity, or non-same-sex attraction, when you try to make a negative out of something that instead should be positive. Queer is about uplifting. It's about taking back a phrase that was once a pejorative. And for an older generation of gay men, it still, frankly, jars and seems like a self-deprecating homophobic remark. But like so
many
aspects.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because when I hear it, I always think of Archie Bunker and the way he would say that phrase.
Exactly. Look, if we want to stay in 2024, we have to acknowledge it's changed. But yes, there will be some for whom it will never change. And that's part of what I think my interpretation of Lincoln as a queer individual does, is it's bringing something new to the table, a new reading. And I think that is what the film, of course, evolves into it. And as Sean pointed out at the beginning, it becomes something more than Abraham Lincoln's life and his sexuality. And I think by doing so, it brings us to how an interpretation about him can also change.
And if I can interject there too, the idea of queerness is, it encompasses bisexuality. It's because you can go through history and Dr. Burlingame has done this, with precision, where Lincoln had considered other women to possibly court and flirted with other women and maybe had intimacy with other women throughout his life. But again, we're not claiming that Lincoln was exclusively gay in this binary that didn't exist then. We are saying that Lincoln certainly married and got married. But there are lots of people at the time, whether it's Herman Melville or Oscar Wilde or Lord Byron or Ralph Waldo Emerson, all of these figures who people now would consider definitely had intimacy with other men. All four of these men were married. All four of these men had children. So, Oscar Wilde had two children. So we have to keep in mind that, yes, Lincoln did get married and have children. But the fact that that is proof that he was exclusively heterosexual is really kind of an old fashioned idea, that Lincoln was queer in the sense that, yes, he had men and he had women and he was very fluid. He would now what we would call sexually fluid. And the term queer is kind of a catch-all term. Some of the headlines about this documentary, was Abraham Lincoln gay? It's a very catchy clickbait title. But the film goes to great lengths to go deeper and discuss the context of the time and what sexuality meant in the 19th century, which is very different than what it is today.
Yeah, well, and we need to take a break in 2 minutes. So maybe that's too much of a topic to get into in the amount of time we have. But what about maybe you can talk about friendship and cross-sex versus same-sex friendship in the 1800s and how that's different from what is possible today.
Well, yeah. You know, Tom, maybe you could take this. Let's go ahead.
Yeah. We both have something to say. So let me take 30 seconds and I'll pass the baton because that's what friendship is, right? Caring and sharing. So look, cross-sex friendships and same-sex friendships, that's key. Those are actually more binary than I would argue sexuality in the 19th century. And it creates homosocial, meaning same-sex sociality worlds. And that's been, frankly, my area of research is looking at intimate male friendship, my phrase for it. So it's very important to distinguish that. It's important to note that bed sharing is a part of that. So I don't want to even, you know, disentangle those two things. In fact, that's common and important to understanding male homosexuality and intimate male friendship. Cross-sex friendships, actually rarer, less common. And even in Lincoln's case, as is pointed out by his stepmother onward, he was always shy, painfully shy and awkward around women.
And I think what's important to point out, too, is that, yes, there are lots of cases where men shared beds and were friends with these men that they shared beds with, and they weren't intimate. We're not saying every man that shared a bed was intimate. But in Lincoln's case, when he shared a bed with Joshua Speed for 4 years, when he was a lawyer and a legislator and could have easily afforded his own place, you have to start asking questions where he wrote deeply intimate letters in phrases that you never saw him write again with anyone else. Or in the case of his bodyguard, David Derrickson, during the Civil War, there is no reason for a man to share a bed with Lincoln for financial reasons in the cottage. I mean, the cottage is still standing. You can go there. There are multiple rooms there. There's a hospital nearby. Derrickson had plenty of beds to choose from, but Lincoln chose to sleep with him in his own bed. And these are instances where it goes beyond friendship when you look at the evidence.
You're listening to a conversation we had on the show back in October. We were joined by Sean Peterson, the director of the documentary film Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. Also with us was Thomas Bolcherski, a professor of history at Eastern Connecticut State University. He's featured in the documentary. And coming up after the break, we'll hear from one of the foremost Lincoln scholars, Michael Burlingame, whose name came up quite a bit during the first part of the show, and we'll hear his perspective. We also heard from many of you. That's coming up after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to a conversation we had on the program back in October. Because it was about Abraham Lincoln, it generated a lot of interest among listeners. We were joined by Sean Peterson, director of Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. The film makes the case that Lincoln may have been what we now have the language to call gay or bisexual. Also with us was Thomas Bolcherski, a professor of history at Eastern Connecticut State University, who's featured in the documentary. And we brought another voice into the conversation who was a little more skeptical of some of these interpretations. Michael Burlingame is the Chancellor Naomi B. Lynn Distinguished Chair in Lincoln Studies at the University of Illinois Springfield and author of the major two-volume biography, Abraham Lincoln, A Life. We started by asking Burlingame, who studied Lincoln for the last 30 years, the extent to which he focused on Lincoln's private or intimate life.
My big Lincoln biography, Abraham Lincoln, A Life, is 2,000 pages. And it is its main claim to usefulness is the depth and extent of the research. I went into manuscript sources, public records, newspapers, and much greater depth than most other Lincoln biographers, including Carl Sandburg. Much of what was available in Sandburg's day was pretty limited, and an awful lot of Lincoln's papers weren't available when he wrote. The papers of Lincoln's personal secretaries weren't available, so its main claim to fame is it's based on particularly in-depth research. And also the second aspect of it that I think is unusual is what I incorporated into my first book, The Inner World of Abraham Lincoln, an attempt to shed light on his emotional life as well as his public life, and to show that there was a connection, the kinds of connections there were between his public life and his private life. For example, I argue that one of the primary reasons he hated slavery with such intensity, despite the fact that he was brought up in an atmosphere that was not anti-slavery, was because of his relationship with his father, who treated him like a slave. And so that's my background. I must say that the tributes that were paid to C.A. Tripp by your fellow panelists are many are well deserved, because he really had the courage in 2005 to say that the Lincoln marriage was pretty terrible. That was when my first book came out in 94. It was actually headlines. I couldn't believe it. It was an AP wire service story that Mrs. Lincoln was corrupt and that Lincoln's marriage was very filled with woe. I've gotten a lot of further research. I've done a lot of further research, and I published a book a couple of years ago called An American Marriage, The Untold Story of Mary Todd Lincoln. Mary Todd and Abraham Lincoln, in which I go into greater depth about how she behaved and why she behaved the way she did, and how she made Lincoln's life, his domestic life, pretty unhappy. So that's
yeah. All right. Well, let's listen to another clip from the film Lover of Men. This is where the historians are describing how Lincoln met Joshua Speed.
When he had finally been accepted into the bar and he was a full-fledged lawyer, it was logical for Lincoln to move to Springfield.
Lincoln arrives in Springfield supposedly penniless, on a borrowed horse with all of his belongings and saddlebags, and is looking for a place to stay and can't afford a room, and somebody suggested Joshua Speed's store.
One of the things that fascinates Lincoln scholars is his bedding down with Joshua Fry Speed for 4 years.
So Lincoln, wanting to buy the materials for a bed, wandered into the store of Joshua Fry Speed. And Speed said it would cost $17. And
Lincoln says he doesn't have enough money, can't buy a mattress.
And that's when Joshua Speed says, well, I have a big double bed upstairs.
Go upstairs and check it out. And a couple of minutes, Lincoln comes down without his saddlebags, and he says, it's great. I've moved in. Really? Okay. I might buy that. But for 4 years? This is lust at first sight.
All right. So, Michael Burlingame, Lincoln shares a bed with Joshua Speed for more than 4 years. They exchange these intimate letters. How do you characterize their relationship?
Well, it's the closest personal relationship we had with anybody, I think, with the possible exception of his wife. The letters that he wrote to Speed are the most emotionally open letters. But it should be pointed out, and this is something that original research does that helps shed light on this, the normal scholarship on Joshua Speed is pretty thin. Although I must say that the makers of the film do, to their credit, have a really good Lincoln scholar on the show, and that is Charles B. Strozier. And if you look closely at evidence that Strozier uncovered, and I did too, Speed says to Lincoln, I have a big double bed upstairs, and it's a big room. I've shared this bed with my partner, James Bell, for the past 2 years. But Bell is about to get married, so he's not staying here anymore. So I've got this empty space in the bed that I've been sharing with my friend and my partner in this business. The two men were co-owners and operators of a what we would call a department store today, dry goods store. So when Lincoln is a recipient of this invitation and is penniless, he says, well, okay, fine. Well, why not? And so they become good friends. And an awful lot of the time that they were together, they were also sharing that same space with William Herndon and Charles Hearst. So they didn't have any privacy. And if there was any sex going on between Lincoln and Speed, Herndon would have known about it. Hearst would have known about it. Some word would have gotten out. And Herndon talks a lot about Lincoln's attitudes towards sex and conduct with the opposite sex. And there's never any hint in any of his writings that that Lincoln was having sex with Joshua Speed.
So I guess, Sean or Thomas, what when you have read and when you think about this relationship, why do you come to a potentially different conclusion about how what is meant by an intimate relationship between the two of them?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's another piece of evidence that that we actually have Dr. Burlingame to thank, because in his Oral History of Abraham Lincoln, John G. Nicolay's Interviews and Essays, Nicolay, who was, you know, his White House secretary, did a bunch of interviews after Lincoln had died. And he interviewed William Butler, who was one of Lincoln's great mentors and was a fellow legislator. And Butler, in this correspondence with Nicolay, said, "Hey, listen, you know, I'm going to pay off your debts. My wife is going to mend your clothes. And I want you to move in with me when you come to Springfield." And we have this letter in the film where he invites Lincoln to move in and when he moves to Springfield. And so instead of moving in with his mentor, who he's friends with, he instead moves in with a complete stranger, which is Joshua Speed, who just happens to be a very good-looking individual. And the idea that, yes, okay, so let's take that. Let's take the bait on that Lincoln was flat broke. Well, why would he need to stay in that bed for four straight years? You know, maybe to get on his feet initially, but they stayed in that bed because not only because of the intimacy between them, but there's other pieces of evidence that point to this, whether it's the letters between Lincoln and Speed. Speed himself described their relationship as no two men were ever more intimate. Speed himself said that, describing him and Lincoln. Most all scholars will say this was his most intimate relationship. So to take away the possibility that they were also physically intimate, whether there are people in the room or not, I asked Jonathan Ned Katz, who's written a lot about men sharing beds, and I said, "What do you think about their other men being in the room at the same time?" And Katz laughed and said, "I've been intimate with men while another man was across the room in a bed. Have you ever been to a college dorm room?" You know, so it's the idea that they couldn't have been intimate with other men there, or when the other men weren't in the room, just shows the very heteronormative interpretation of history. And that's what I think the film gets into a little bit, is when you take, and as Burlingame pointed out just now, that when you read the primary sources, the evidence, when you look at it through a different lens, when queer scholars look at this evidence and say, "Wait a minute, I see something in here through the lens of a queer person that is not, it's the undertone, it's the subtext of a lot of this material that is being reinterpreted, because it was for so long gatekeeped by Lincoln scholars who looked at things from their own perspective, which is heteronormativity and straight ideology."
This, I think, fits nicely with something somebody who's called in wants to mention on the program today. And we have Elizabeth calling from Decatur on line 3. Elizabeth, thank you for calling in.
Good morning. I'm interested what you think that at the time of Lincoln's involvement with these men, and also married and having children without any apparent notoriety, how similar is that to the British public schools much more recently, when school seniors are said to have sexual relations with junior schoolboys and then go on to have marriage and fatherhood in the rest of their lives?
The idea, I guess, you said sexually interactive, right, with other men, but they that doesn't come to define their sexuality throughout the course of their life. Let me thank you for the call, Elizabeth. I appreciate that. Let me put that question to Thomas Belchursky.
Yeah, thanks for that question. My own research into college age men going back to the 19th century suggests both gender fluidity and fluidity in what we would call sexual identity. And these relationships, these friendships that they shared, which I again describe as intimate male friendships, can encompass those aspects of human sexuality as well. And I think it's important that scholars have actually now for a generation pointed out that this was a kind of a liminal, meaning a transitional moment in a man's life where they're in these homosocial settings, for example, colleges, schools, right on point there with the question, where there's actually less access to women, where in these same-sex environments, what is available to them for their emotional and physical needs are other men. Scholars have called this in other settings as situational homosexuality. It's kind of an older way of speaking about it, because it does also, I think, in that phraseology, discount those men for whom this was pleasurable, for whom this was a lifelong desire that never went away. But it does speak to fluidity. And that's our term now. It's a kind of a researcher's term. I think it's becoming more culturally accepted that sexual fluidity is commonplace. And in reading it in the past, we maybe find different norms in our society that would allow that fluidity at different times and different moments. But to take it as a kind of axiomatic value that sexual fluidity has existed throughout human history, I think is important to being able to make these connections between past and present.
And Thomas, I don't think we've heard from you on this question of Joshua Speed and Lincoln yet. So how do you view their relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I was quoted in the film, and I won't repeat that, but I'll say that what I have read in the letters, what I've read in the evidence so far in my study of Joshua Speed and connecting with the very few scholars who have studied Speed, Joshua and his brother James, most commonly in tandem, is that Lincoln's relationship to the Speed family is important. And it's actually beyond Joshua. It's again to James and to his actually Joshua's sister, to his mother. Lincoln's time in Farmington was critical in shaping his views, I think, in an anti-slavery direction as well. And to suggest that this connection to Speed continued throughout his life, that he was proud of it, is also to suggest that Lincoln could hold a place in his heart for Joshua Speed, even when their period of physical intimacy had ended. And I don't think it's to say that he was ever ashamed of it or tried to hide it. I don't see shame in Abraham Lincoln's heart here, and I don't see him finding Joshua Speed something he wants to try to hide. There were societal norms. There were standards as to how one's sexual practices were spoken of. It's much more of an illusion. It's much more subtext and subtlety, innuendos, frankly. And Lincoln's humor, which is both sexualized and bawdy at times, is a master class in having to tell a funny joke that is sexualized. So it's sort of like woven into Lincoln's life, and his friendship with Speed is a key moment where he becomes much more mature, where he accepts his path towards marriage. And as both men marry a year apart from one another, they understand that that phase of their lives, this friendship, this intimate friendship, is over.
Michael Burlingame, we need to take a break in about another minute, but I wonder if you want to respond to anything you've heard in the last couple of answers here.
Well, yes, that the contribution that's most important from my point of view anyway in the film is Charles Strozier, who's really knowledgeable Lincoln scholar. And that's one of the weaknesses of the film, in my view, is there's no consultation with the historian who knows the most about Lincoln at the soldier's home, where he supposedly had an affair with Captain Derrickson, when in fact he and Derrickson were together only for 2 weeks. In the absence of Mrs. Lincoln, I think in a strong emotional relationship and sexual relationship emerged in 2 weeks. It's pretty unlikely. And the letters that are exchanged between Joshua Speed and Lincoln, to my way of thinking, have no sexual overtones. There's nothing that the warmth of the kind of intimacy that people expressed in love letters in those days. I've been asked by the Lincoln Republicans a while back, don't you think those letters prove that Lincoln and Speed were gay and lovers? And I said, well, I just don't see it. And I was told, well, you have to be gay. And I said, well, what can I tell you? I'm a compulsive heterosexual.
All right. We need to take another break on the program. When we return, more from our October conversation on the documentary released last fall called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for The 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Arts Center,
located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. All today, we're revisiting a conversation that we first aired back in October. It's about a documentary called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. The film makes the case that Lincoln's life and relationships with men have been put in the closet, you might say, by straight historians. We were joined for this by the director of the film, Sean Peterson, Thomas Belchursky, a professor of history at Eastern Connecticut State University. He's featured in the documentary. And we heard from one of the most well-known scholars on our 16th president, Michael Burlingame, chair in Lincoln Studies at the University of Illinois Springfield, had a more skeptical view of the case made in the documentary about Lincoln's sexuality. We'll pick up here, where we ask Sean Peterson what it means to prescribe modern identities or terms like gay or bisexual to someone living in Abraham Lincoln's time.
That's a great question. I mean, you know, that's the thing. We sort of can't apply these 20th century, 21st century terms. And you're right, the terms homosexuality and homosexuality were basically invented. These ideas and these concepts were totally made up in the late 1900s, and or around 1870, I'm sorry, in 1870. And they really didn't become popularized until the early 20th century. So, you know, most scholars will be fine with the Greeks and the Romans. We all know about the Greeks and the Romans being sexually fluid, but that didn't really change all up and through Lincoln's time, and then into the late 1800s, when these terms were just made up. And then Freud, and keep in mind, this, we get into this in the film. It's very important to understand that the film gets into the context of the history of sexuality. So then Freud takes these terms, and then the church kind of takes on these terms, and it starts to make homosexuality, if you are being intimate with a man, then it's a pathology, it's a sickness, it's an illness. And then somehow the church takes this sin and makes it the ultimate sin of all sins, when throughout most of Christian history, and there have been pockets of times where this is a little different, but in general, if you have sex outside of marriage, that's a sin. So whether that's with another person of the same sex, or whether it's bestiality, or whether it's cheating on your wife, all of these are the same sin. If you're not making babies for the church, then it's a sin. But suddenly, when we get into the 20th century, homosexuality becomes the ultimate sin. So for most of human history, people were very fluid, and they just acted on their sexual impulses, especially out in the prairie. Keep in mind, Lincoln spent most of his time in his young years with men only. And a lot of these men would get, you know, have an intimate relationship or intimate moment with someone, you know, even if it was only for 2 weeks. So that happened, and it was very, very common behavior. And again, in the 19th century, there's not a lot of writings about explicit intimacy. Like, you don't, even someone like Walt Whitman, who we all agree was intimate with men, didn't write explicitly. It wasn't proper etiquette in the Victorian period to write about this. So this idea that Lincoln never wrote a letter where he said, "I held you in my arms, sweet, and kissed you." He didn't write a letter about like that about Mary either. You know, people didn't write like that then. So you have to read into the context of the way they are writing. And when Lincoln talks about how jealous he is of Joshua Speed's new wife, and how heartbroken he is, and how miserable he is, and how he hopes he would die, you have to say, okay, what is he saying here when this man moves away and gets married that is different than any of his other writings?
Michael Burlingame, what evidence do we have of Lincoln's? So as Sean said, people were not writing in explicit ways they do in modern, for better and worse, in modern life. What evidence do we have of Lincoln's sexual attractions, his sexual desire? What sort of sexual person
he was? There's all kinds of evidence that he was very strongly drawn sexually to women. Herndon testifies to that, and Herndon knew him very well. David Davis, one of his best friends in the political world, whom he named to the United States Supreme Court, says Lincoln was very strongly attracted to women, and they were attracted to him, and he saved many a woman's honor by resisting their advances, and that that he loved to tell jokes about sex, and that his colleagues on the circuit talked about how his he was drawn to women. So and he falls head over heels, and he breaks off the relationship with Mary Todd because he falls head over heels in love with a beautiful 18-year-old, and he's 31. There's all kinds of evidence that he was strongly sexually attracted to women, even though he was shy and awkward around them. And if you read the letters that Lincoln's contemporaries wrote to their wives, those are filled with much more overt expressions of affection and physical longing than Lincoln ever did to Mrs. Lincoln. That's partly because they was not a real love relationship.
Well, I just want to inject in there again that we're not trying to make the case that he was exclusively gay. Certainly, Lincoln was a sexual being, and he was a fluid being, and he certainly had flirtations with women, but he also had it with men. So just because he may have had these flirtations with women doesn't exclude him from also having had intimacy with men. One doesn't preclude the other. And that's the case we're making, is the fluidity of the time. So whenever we talk about, like, take a side, are you heterosexual or are you homosexual? That is a modern concept. That's something that's very young in society. And it's a very new idea that really didn't become popular until the 1920s. Before that, it was fluid. So we're not contesting Lincoln was also attracted to women.
Well, it strikes me as strange that the taboo about homosexuality is a modern phenomenon. Really? Why were men in the 19th century in the closet all the time then? Were drawn to other men.
Well, I mean,
they didn't want to be embarrassed and socially ostracized and even jailed, even executed.
No, and as John Stauffer from Harvard University said, there are almost zero instances of two consensual men having sex and being punished for it. That the sodomy laws in the 19th century specifically were really designed to protect older men from young boys. It was non-consensual sex that those sodomy laws were focused on. Consensual sex between same-sex people almost never was prosecuted. And if it was, in this very rare cases, it was usually when one person had some sort of issue with the other, and so those laws were underutilized, almost not utilized in the 19th century. The shame around it, and you've made a point, Dr. Burlingame, that Lincoln openly in the White House said to everyone, "Hey, I slept with Joshua Speed for 4 years," and everyone heard it, and the media could have grabbed that and run with it. But because it was so common, and because no one looked down upon it, and there was no shame around it, the media didn't have anything to run with, because culturally that was acceptable, and so there wasn't a lot of that bashing going on, because it was such a fluid society. And that's why we went to great lengths to get all these Ivy League scholars who are experts in the field of sexuality in the film. Because this isn't really a movie about the history of Lincoln. It's a movie about the history of sexuality. And these people that have dedicated their lives to it have countered these same old arguments that men shared beds and it would have been in the press if anyone had known.
Well, the movie is really not about Lincoln. The most of the movie is about, which I've seen the movie, is about the history of sexuality and everything you've been discussing. The problem with it is the people you've consulted about Lincoln really don't know much about Lincoln.
Well, I will say, Dr. Burlingame, I did email you 3 times and inviting you to be in the film, and you never wrote back to me. I wrote to your University of Illinois email and your website email, because I wanted you to be in the film to contribute, because I wanted to hear that side of it. And I reached out to many scholars who disagree with this theory, and no one wrote me back. So a lot of people on your side of the aisle really didn't want to touch this. And I would have loved to have had you in the film if you had written
back. All right, sorry, go ahead. I'll let you respond to that.
Well, I apologize. I normally answer my email, and I don't recall receiving those messages, but I'll check my email cache.
All right. Let me see if we can lower the temperature a little bit and get one more caller in before, because we only have about 5 minutes left in our time together. Andy has been patiently waiting on the line from Clay County, Illinois. Andy, thank you for calling in. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, I love the program. Thanks a lot for having me. I just want to say I am obsessed with Abraham Lincoln. I'm talking to you in my apartment where I've got 6 portraits of him. I've got busts. I've got many history books and biographies about Lincoln. And I also just want to say that I am totally happy about the advances made in gay and queer rights. If Lincoln turned out to be gay or bisexual, it would not diminish my love for him one bit. But my question for the historians and for the director today is really in light of Doris Kearns Goodwin's biography, Team of Rivals, where she makes a point to push back really hard on this claim that Lincoln was gay because she believes that it totally misinterprets a fascinating aspect of male friendship in the 18th century, which I know you guys have touched on some, but this idea that because of this intimacy, because of these jealousies, that it must imply sexuality, I think that that says a lot more about, number one, about how lacking in real intimacy men in their friendships have in our society right now, as well as our desire to sexualize things, and says a lot more about us. But in the book, I mean, she shows Salmon P. Chase, William Henry Seward. She goes into letters between their friends. They're also very intimate. They also get into these jealousies. And I'm not saying that I'm, you know, nervous that, oh, you guys are going to make Abraham Lincoln out to be something he's not. I'm thinking that this trivializes and misunderstands one of the fascinating aspects of that time in history and of the way our society was set up. So that relationships between someone like Joshua Speed and Abraham Lincoln could be so important, could be so intimate, could be full of the vulnerabilities that I think our society right now really needs. And, you know, sadly, when we read it today, we think, oh, well, it looks like they had some sexual thing going on. I think it just says a lot more about where we are today, which, of course, a lot of history does, than it does reveal things about those times. And part of that is because I just think it's a pretty thin reed of supposed evidence we're making these rather sweeping claims on.
Andy, thank you so much for calling in and waiting again. I really appreciate it. We are so short on time. So Sean or Thomas, do you want to respond to what Andy had to say there?
I mean, just to say, I know Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote her book back in the early 2000s and she's given interviews subsequently. So she doesn't really address that issue head on in her book, but she has weighed in on it. I think she equivocates a bit. I think what some of the scholars, who I really do respect and read, is they take this kind of equivocation of unprovable, it's not provable, and they then, you know, take sort of heteronormativity as the standard by which we then operate. It's fine. It's an easy way to live your life. It also may miss things. And I think that's why the film is a valuable contribution, because it actually turns everything on its head and asks you to look at the evidence from a different point of view. Interpretations are built upon decades of scholarship, upon new sources coming to life, but also new people looking at those sources and trying to bring in a different point of view.
Michael Burlingame, just maybe 30 seconds. I guess I just want to end with this question. You know, history is about the present as much as it is about the past, and looking through different lenses over the years. Are these questions ever things that can be answered definitively, or is it always subject to who's doing the interpretation?
Well, it's very difficult to prove a negative in this case. To prove he didn't have sex with men, what do you think? My argument is that the evidence that we do have, it makes it seem possible, but highly unlikely, that Lincoln had sex with men.
That was Michael Burlingame, Naomi B. Lynn Distinguished Chair in Lincoln Studies at the University of Illinois Springfield, and author of the major 2-volume biography, Abraham Lincoln, A Life. We spoke with him on the 21st show back in October last year to get his take on a documentary film about Lincoln called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. We were also joined by Sean Peterson, the director of Lover of Men, and Thomas Balcherski, professor of history at Eastern Connecticut State University and someone who is featured in the film. If you'd like to see it for yourself, it's available now on Amazon and Apple TV. And speaking of, you can find the 21st show now on YouTube, if that's a more convenient way for you to listen. Just search for Illinois Public Media. That's all the time we have for our program today. Before we go, we'd love to hear what you think about what we've been talking about, be it on today's program or anything in the past, whether you liked it, didn't like it. If you think we got something wrong, or maybe you want to tell us we did something right, that's okay too. You can leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. Anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121. You can find that number, our email address, and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Today's conversation was originally produced by Anna Casey. Lelina Zurova is an associate producer, and our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.